Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
In the spirit of reconciliation, the Swapcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respect to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
We're talking again
about body swapping.
Welcome to the Swapcast podcast, the world's only podcast dedicated to body swap movies. I'm your host, Paul Mitzi, and with me we have...
Brendan Levi.
And joining us today from the long-running and hilarious podcast, BGM Bad Gay Movies, all the way from Toronto, Canada...
Padam padam, gentlemen, this is Bill Antoniou.
Welcome.
Hey.
I am so excited. I can't believe I'm finally on this show. I have been curious about being a guest on this show for literally years. I've been listening to you guys. Brendan, we just met, but I feel like I know you. I always tell Paul that I looked you up, and I was so surprised that you're much cuter than guys who laugh that much at their own jokes usually are. So congrats on that. But no, I feel like I know you. I've enjoyed the camaraderie of the bunch of you and Lucy, of course, over the years. So it's a real honor and a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. And I'm so excited for the opportunity that... of you being able to insult me in real time of the barrage of angry text messages I usually get after you've listened.
Yeah, and I'm excited I get to do my bad Australian accent and you can tell everyone publicly how awful it is.
Well, in today's episode, we'll be breaking down the 1987 supernatural comedy, Hunk, starring John Allen Nelson and Deborah Sheldon, where a computer nerd makes a deal with the devil to become a handsome hunk. But before we get into that, just a reminder that we absolutely love hearing from our listeners and we welcome film suggestions for future episodes. So please reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram, send us an email at theswapcastpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to support our show, reviewing us is the best way possible. So to say thank you, if we reach 100 star ratings on iTunes and Spotify, we will finally fulfill our fans' most common request to review Face Off.
That's like 30 years in the making. I don't even see the point in it. Like what... I don't even know what that would look like at this point, you guys reviewing Face Off. Or will it be super anticlimactic when it finally happens?
Oh, like everything on this show, it will definitely be super anticlimactic. But the listeners want it, so we give them what they want.
Is it that no one uses iTunes for their podcasts anymore? Is that why?
Well, that's why I've opened it up to Spotify as well.
Right.
Like, they've got other avenues.
Spotify doesn't do reviews.
They need us, just give us 5 stars. Oh, okay. That's all we ask.
I use Pocket Cast. Yeah. It doesn't have a review option.
Yeah. Well, same with Google Podcasts. All we want is the 5 stars. Yeah. That's what we're asking. We're not asking for much.
I just feel I haven't had a review or a rating or anything like that on my show in a very long time. I feel like it's just something people aren't doing anymore.
Mm. And I don't like review podcasts ever.
Yeah, even when I love them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
well, I do nothing. Maybe for the you're the problem. You are both the problem. On to Hunk. Our amazing listener Guy suggested this film to us, specifically stating that I would enjoy it.
My
question is, do you think Guy was right in thinking this was up my alley? And beyond that, was it up either of your alleys?
Well, it's definitely at Brendan's. I know how much he loves a blonde man in a Speedo. I know enough to know that. I think Guy saw the poster and decided it was going to be something you would enjoy. I don't imagine how anyone could. This is my second time watching this movie, by the way. I watched it on TV when I was like 21 or something. And I don't see how anyone would watch this and recommend it to anyone for any reason, but...
Well, yeah, you say you watched it. Did you watch the whole thing? or like, why didn't you switch off?
I do masturbate to hot guys in movies all the time, Brendan, in case that's what you're implying. But yes, I did watch the whole thing because it's not sexy. That's the thing. Like, John Allen Nelson is, he's super 80s hot. And of course, I'm jumping ahead to a different section of the show. Yeah. But the, and
well, I just assume that's all we'll talk about is how hot this dude is.
Well, because he's like magazine perfect, which is not necessarily hot to everybody, right? Like, when you're perfect on paper, that's not necessary, you know. And he doesn't, I don't know that he has like star charisma as much as he is a lovely guy. But the movie itself doesn't, it's not a sexy movie, you know. It has all the trappings of an 80s sex comedy without anything sexy happening.
Like, I'm as straight as a ruler, but I could, like, those shots of him, like, flexing his back in the light, like, I understood he's like a fucking Greek, like, painting, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he is extremely sexy.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
And maintained it for a long time, too. Like, that guy, he still works, and, like, he's still in shape, especially for his age.
Yeah, he's a total dilf now. Yeah. But... Yeah, I think Guy was completely right in thinking this was up my alley. Well,
that's right. Not I forgot only... what terrible taste you have, too.
This film was fantastic. I enjoyed every fucking minute of this thing. Beyond the fact that the guy was extremely hot. Mm-hmm. The other thing about this film is that the guy was extremely hot. And... I love the fact this, I couldn't find information on it, but I am sure the director of this film must have been gay because this film like leers.
Yes.
And for no reason at all, he is in like speedos and underpants for most
constantly,
of this film.
Yeah.
Constantly in a state of undress. Every background actor is a sexy guy with abs flexing.
And there's no gratuitous tits in this movie.
Yeah.
The film which is for an 80s sex comedy.
Yeah, that was something I was like, here it goes. I'm ready to see the crazy nurse lady take her top off. And she doesn't. And I just...
Not even lady take her top off. In these movies, it's like just a random shot of a guy driving by a lady and ripping her top off, like on the beach. Like, beach comedies are always about accidental nudity. And there's none of that, which is
especially
surprising.
this era and this genre. Like, it was... Like, every time I saw a woman, like, oh, she's going to obviously, you know, lose her clothes somehow. But it didn't happen.
But I also wonder if it's because they wanted to make, like, a PG sex comedy. Like, I wonder if this movie has an in mind being for kids in some way. I don't know how. But because of the way that, like, when he's living his fantasy life, it's something that would only make sense to a 10-year-old. Like, he's getting all this stuff delivered to his house, which is, like, golf clubs and a chainsaw.
And Nike shoes.
A rack of Tic Tacs,
And a popcorn maker. For some reason, he doesn't know how to control a popcorn maker. And his attempt... Well, that's before he does the switch. But his attempt to yuppify his house and buy all this stuff is to pile his whole house with popcorn. But the way that, like, the devil is dressed like a pirate. And, like, it's silly. It's basically the plot of Damn Yankees, which I know you guys have seen. And
I was thinking the exact same thing.
And I wonder if it is intentionally clean for that reason.
I was also feeling like it had very much a bedazzled, like the, you know, the demon that you love to hate or, you know what I mean? Like,
we've seen this plot a million times over, like Damn Yankees, even like Disney's Hercules,
the
bedazzled.
Bargain,
but yeah, I think even Damn Yankees probably sexualizes Gwen Verdon more than this film sexualizes. What was her name? So she's from she was from Dallas, wasn't she?
Deborah
Shelton.
She would have just been in Body Double when she made this. She was so pretty.
Yeah. Well, there was like that scene where she like sort of is. I think it's the second time she appears, and she's in this like red dress.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to be doing this seductive dance.
Yeah, which is like bad voguing. Yeah.
Yes. I was like, just reminded of like the B-52s.
Totally. Like that. That's her least flattering hairstyle dress, and outfit throughout the
outfit,
movie.
For sure.
Because she's like 39 here, which in the
and
80s
she's like
would
staring
look
at you like a freak.
It does now. Totally, yeah. And she was really beautiful. She was a former Miss Virginia.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think one of the big pleasures of this film is how 80s it is.
Without a doubt. Even like the bathing suits. The bathing suits are so 80s and it gives them 80s bodies.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. But it kind of, it feels like if Ryan Murphy was making something about the 80s, mm-hmm. like the aesthetic would be exactly the same. It's like a gay, extremely gay, bright colored, fun, I don't know.
Except it would be spiffier. It would be spiffier if Ryan Murphy was doing it. Like a lot of this movie, it's obviously filmed very quickly on a low budget and a lot of it just looks mm-hmm. crummy. Like, I don't understand why you get the cheapest beach rental in this apparently expensive seaside resort. And that means, for some reason, that there's, like, garbage and debris everywhere. Like, the cheapest place would just be the smallest place. Yeah, it wouldn't be a place that's literally, like, the roof fell in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to this plot for like logic or reason anyway.
No, of course not. But that's also the problem with it not being sexier is that if I am just there to watch him in a Speedo, like have him fuck around a little bit more. You know, he doesn't really... The whole point of Faustian bargains is to get what you want in order to realize that it's not really what you wanted and you wanted something else. But he doesn't really like have a good time indulging in the bad stuff other than like eating three pizzas at once. That's the only part... Where I was thinking, like, if I could eat whatever I wanted and not gain weight, I'd be like, "That my soul is a small price to pay for that, you know, privilege." But
he does convince two twins to commit incest.
Right, that's right. that whole sequence of, like, opening the door to these girls who clearly don't know what movie they're in, that are apparently always conquest. But, of course, none of us are coming to this movie for the logic of the plot, but there is, like, an internal logic that should be... that I had questions about. Like, this whole pact. Like, why doesn't the devil just come to him at work and say, give me your soul and I'll give you the most successful computer program of all time and then you'll be a billionaire and then you'll have whatever you want. Like, why is it this whole complicated, like... I'm going to make this program so that you then get a bonus and then you go to the beach and you rent this shitty house and then I come in and make this and this weird leasing of his soul that if you opt out by September 1st, it's like, it's so strange and overly complicated.
Yeah. And it kind of takes the stakes out a bit because you know that he could definitely get out of this situation and he clearly knows that he's in a bad situation.
Right.
Like you'd think the devil would tell him after the lease is up that he's going to have to be like
a murderer,
agent of evil.
Yeah. I didn't get that either. Like, isn't the whole point to seduce him with all, like it's Pinocchio's Island basically, which is that like it's a carnival all day. And then you don't know that you're going to become a donkey at the end of all the fun. And so, The devil lays his cards out on the table a bit too easily in this movie. And so it's like, what is basically they had a location on the beach for a month and they had a hot guy in a Speedo and they're like, what do we do with this? Let's write a script.
And I wish more movies were made that way.
I was about to say, apparently it's enough for Paul. Yeah. Speaking of plots and logic, Paul, do you want to take the audience through the,
oh yes.
Okay. The plot in 30 seconds.
Oh, I've never been here for this live. Fascinating. Is that sound effect put in post, by the way, that countdown? Do I get to hear it now?
No, it's in post. No,
it's in post. Right. So,
the sausage is made.
And what a sausage. All right.
You ready?
Count me in.
Go.
All right, so there's this nerdy computer program that, and stuff. Then... You wasted so much fucking time.
20 seconds. Go.
He makes a deal with the devil. They turn him into a hot guy. And then he falls in love with a psychologist. But it turns out to be the devil's handmaiden. And then he falls in love with her. And then he gets out of the bargain. And then he ends up with the handmaiden. And they live ever happily ever after.
Oh, you did it. Just on the buzzer.
And what a fucking... stupid ending was that though.
Well,
that
why does she have the same due date as him if she's from like the Middle Ages?
Yes.
She's like, well, so my date comes up in September, and it's like, okay, but you've been around for 500 years. He only got one summer. Anyway, I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off.
Yeah, no, but like, yeah, she, we find out she is in a deal with the devil herself, and that if she doesn't get him to turn evil by a certain date, then she will revert back to what she was before she made the deal. And yeah. then we find out that what she was before was another hot chick.
Yeah, totally. That's how you know it's an 80s comedy made for ultimately made for men, is that she doesn't turn back into like Fiona in Shrek as she should.
Yeah.
Like it should be some like Roseanne Barr woman that, you know, comes out of it in the end. But no, she's in the hot disguise that she was in as the hot psychiatrist, which, by the way, why did he even go to a psychiatrist to begin with? Why was he there to narrate his tale?
Yeah, the narration, I don't know if that was like, I feel like that's something you often throw in when you feel like you don't have a plot, but it is like pretty, like it's pretty fretted in there. So I wasn't sure what it was about.
I always daydreamed about being one of those impossibly cool guys you see in the movies or commercials. You know, the kind that drive Maseratis and run major corporations. Kind that drip with women and self-confidence. You know, the kind that look great in those bikini briefs that ride up the crack in your buns.
Well, I tried to find out stuff about this director, whose name is now escaping me. He's only made two films, and the other one was like an 80s sex comedy before this. Also with...
have you seen that?
Hilary Shepherd, no. And then he seems to have also written books about old movies. Like, he's written books about movie posters of back in the day. So I think he's like some kind of, you know, old movie enthusiast or whatever. But there is there's a complete lack of skill. There's a lot of insert, like this whole movie, if you told me everyone shot all their scenes completely alone, I would believe you. Cause there's a lot of like, single shots of people looking into the camera as if they're in an 80s commercial. Like, wow, that's amazing. It's like a shampoo commercial or something. A lot of insert shots like that. And then narration that changes tone all the time. Like, I wasn't even sure if it was his voice or not, or if it was the other guy's voice. I don't know. The whole thing was bizarre.
So I know what you're talking about with the like talking into camera.
Yeah.
And I think one of the characters that really did that the most was
Chachka.
Polly Clutter.
Yeah.
Chachka.
Yeah. Chachka. Yeah.
What did we think of this character?
Well, apparently she's like a famous, she's passed away now, but she was like a famous improv teacher among whose students numbered Lisa Kudrow and Conan O'Brien.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, you get offered something like this and you cash the check and who can blame her? But, you know, it's just amazing to think that when you watch the travesty of what's being done to her in this movie.
Though I thought she was fun, though. Like...
I didn't understand the point of why she was there, but she was like another like set dressing of like 80s nostalgia, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of characters in this movie. I don't understand why they're there. Like, why do we need the devil and the temptress? Like, we didn't need both characters. I mean, this movie was probably written every morning before they went to set while they were snorting cocaine off of the script on their way to the set. She's a typical 80s character. That's someone that you see in 80s comedies a lot, is like the sexless woman. You know, she's she's like 30 going on 60. She's usually overweight. And so no matter what the milieu is, she's like...
Well, we knew she wasn't going to be a love interest, obviously.
Yeah. Right. But also like everyone, no one... Like, everyone's got exposed skin on the beach all the time, and she's always, like, fully dressed up to her neck with giant bows in her hair, you know? Like, her name should just be Unfuckable. That's what she's supposed to be. And given that it's that kind of character, I mean, you know, she does all right. You can tell she's a funny actor who is just doing her best. Again, I'm pretty sure that a lot of her scenes were shot after everyone else went home, and she was just, like, mugging for the camera, so...
I think overall, though, like... I don't think there was any performances that stood out to me as being particularly terrible in this film. I think for what they were being asked to do.
That was amazing. You guys have put up with so much from Paul for so long. I don't know how you do it. I get mad at him just messaging him on Facebook. I can't help but tell him what an idiot he is. But you guys are friends with him. It's crazy.
Well, tell me this, Brendan. Which performance did you think was terrible?
Yeah.
Fucking, like, I don't remember anyone's name. Just anyone from the beach, the locals. I could not care less about.
Those people were hilarious. Those people were playing trivia on the beach. They all look like they are either checking the stock numbers or snorting cocaine 24/7. And for some reason, they're playing like challenging trivia on the beach and really like going after each other to get the answers right.
I also feel like because of the quality of what I watched was so low, everyone, I was like, I know this can't be like Lake Bell or is it Noel Fielding from the Mighty Boosh, like that couple,
right?
Do you know, like they were constantly like, I was like, I know this can't be a cameo from them because they would probably be children, but everyone just looked like sort of famous people, and that was the game I played when they were on screen.
Hillary Shepherd was in so much stuff that I saw around that time. The woman who plays like the evil, like the mean broad. She was on an episode of The Golden Girls that I always remember as a fitness instructor, and she was in a really bad 80s sex comedy called Private Resort with Johnny Depp and I think Rob Morrow. I remember she was in that. She still works too. Yeah.
I was actually like looking through the IMDb's. Like most of these people are still working. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is a kind of movie that was made a lot, and it was just a way that people, you know, paid the rent, basically, is that you just showed up to, and you knew what you were in, you knew, and this is why no one gives a terrible performance in this movie, or nothing you can hold against them, is because they all know what they're doing, and they all know what they're in, and they all know that they're basically making money.
Well, everyone's matching the tone, right? Like,
yeah.
There's no one,
yeah.
You're like...
They know they're making basket lining because this is what all these movies were, and it's going to go straight to video and everyone's going to forget it. So who's worried about their career in any way, you know? Did you guys watch this on YouTube, by the way? Did you watch that YouTube link that points out where Brad Pitt is?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, crazy. This is actually the first film Brad Pitt was ever in, and he's a background extra.
Yeah.
Because the director was like, get that guy shirtless in the background.
Oh, I think Brad Pitt was probably like rent boying for some producer at that point.
Yes.
He was like, come to Laguna on Monday and we'll put you in the background.
The hilarious thing about this YouTube version that we watched, it was obviously uploaded by someone who has created this really shitty sci-fi comic that he's trying to push. So every now and then a character from his comic will just pop up in the corner of the screen or the cover of the comic. And I don't know if you guys, did you guys watch till after the credits?
No, I couldn't do that.
What the bad.
So after the credits, he actually does a reel of like the comics and like showing actual pages for it and done to like this rap rock song on top of it. Oh. And there's even shots of him holding up the comic book and he looks creepy as fuck.
Oh, well, I mean, I saw his YouTube channel. Like, he's got quite a lot of content on there as well as movies
that
I'm sure have all uploaded. Been addended with this, with this information.
What a way to advertise, right? Just finding like all these like straight to VHS tapes and uploading them
kinds.
For people.
Takes all kinds.
Yeah, but like how, what's the crossover audience of the people that want to watch old 80s sex comedies and read shitty sci-fi comics? Like, I don't know.
I don't know that.
Guys who want to jerk off at 3 a.m. to that guy they remember when they were like, in their teens.
I just don't know that trying to find the logic of the way YouTubers amuse themselves in their free time is a worthwhile enterprise. I feel like you'll get lost trying to figure that one out.
I thought overall the music in this film was fun, but then that end credit song was one of the worst I've ever
fucking heard.
The singer
kept missing her notes.
Let your inside out for the world to see. Discover my soul.
It's like we're listening to take one on this one. That song was like when Mark Wahlberg does that song in Boogie Nights, you know, when he's recording that. That's what it sounded like to me, where it's like everyone's, again, coked out, hungover, it's too early in the morning, no one slept, and they just do take one and they're like, it's good, we got it, we nailed it.
Yeah, it was especially terrible. I was actually surprised at that. Now... you know, we'd be remiss to talk about this in a gay context with you on the show, Bill. So, This film did have one gay character in it,
which
there's a montage where he was showing that he can get any girl he wants.
Right.
And then, but the wording that the devil uses, that you can get anyone that's likes men will be attracted to you or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to like a guy at the bar and he gives a little like smile and wave at him. I was actually surprised he wasn't like too disgusted by the gay guy hitting on
him. He was considering it.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. And also, that is notable because, and I think about this a lot when I watch movies from the 70s and 80s, and the 80s especially is like the height of homophobia in pop culture, like the sort of Reagan era and fear of AIDS, where any mention of a gay person is like explosively, usually explosively homophobic. And in an 80s sex comedies are really, really bad for this. Like, they still make me wince, even though I think of myself as being, you know, more thick-skinned than that. So your supposition that this director might be somewhat gay, given the way that he favors John Ellen Nelson, the way he shoots him, but also the fact that there isn't this, like, knee-jerk fear of gayness. The fact that, he's got James Coco playing the devil, who was an openly gay actor. And usually read that way in all the roles that he played. He was also an Academy Award nominee, which tells you how well his career was going by the late 80s. Although I doubt he was on the set for more than like a week. And then you do have this character who usually in an 80s comedy, when they want to point out that someone's gay, it's like that guy in St. Elmo's Fire, where he's like full makeup and a daiquiri in his hand. Yeah. So that character was actually quite subdued for what I would expect from this kind of movie.
Yeah, I wasn't completely offended by the moment, and that was pleasing to me.
Well, yeah, and like you said, his reaction, because normally, again, in an 80s comedy, the guy would react by, you know, throwing the guy off a pier.
Flipping
or
out.
Like that. Yeah. So the fact that he just,
There's also...
I read his face, and it's really like, oh...
Right.
Is this gonna happen? Is this something I want?
I mean, if you can eat all the pizza you want, why not?
Yeah.
Why not just indulge in everything?
Yeah, there's no chance of getting
like
AIDS.
Once you've banged every girl in Seaview.
There's also a character who's like a TV host, and his name was Garrison Gaylord.
Garrison Gaylord.
I was gonna say, I thought he was the gay character.
Played by a Broadway legend, too, who I believe... He was on Mad Men. That's the guy who plays the big boss on Mad Men.
I thought I recognized him.
But he was in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying back in the day. Like, that guy is a big, big deal. Which, again, no surprise. He was paid however much he was paid to be on the beach for a week, and why not?
Well, do we think that character was supposed to be gay-coded, or was Gaylord a bit of a... Like, surely Gaylord by 1987 was a term people were using.
I still like to use it because it makes me happy. He's holding a frozen drink in his hand, and then he minces as he walks away. When he throws that hissy fit and walks away, he's in quite a snit. But at the same time, he's dressed like some kind of, like... Curious
Safari.
George Explorer.
Yeah,
so
Safari,
I can see why. Yeah, it's like, why didn't you just gay him out? Like, why isn't he wearing like a bright pink outfit or something?
Or at least a cravat, right?
Yeah, or something. But he's apparently famous because he walks by our hunk hero, Hunk Golden, as is his name.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, hey, that's Garrison Gaylord. So it's like, oh, I guess he's well known. I don't know. I think they were going for some kind of like Richard Simmons level
internationally
of celebrity.
Known,
or,
yeah.
Yeah. I think, was it a take on that show,
Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous?
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. Even though I have questions about this supposedly exclusive beach resort, which, again, and you guys are Australian, the place that has the most shitty beach towns outside of Florida, so you know when you see a crummy place what you're looking at, and it's like, this is the place that's like so high-end and exclusive, and even though it always looks like a hurricane just went through and knocked every building down.
Yeah, no, totally. It wasn't giving the OC by any
Yeah, again, not spiffy looking.
One of my favorite lines in this movie was I finally found a beautiful woman and she wants me to bomb Pearl Harbor.
I like when he meets the douches on the beach and the other guy, the other woman, the blonde woman's husband, who's wearing like the worst toupee you've ever seen in your life, is like, yeah. Oh, hunk, is that short for hairdresser? And I'm like, ooh, that's a really gay, a clever gay reference. But you can understand why. All these men are showing off their bods in like tank tops and shorts, and hunk is walking around in the tiniest Speedo you ever saw in your life. In the long shots, he looks like he's freezing cold because they're probably shooting it in like April on the beach. It's like, yeah, of course they think you're gay. You're naked all the time.
Another gay a touch that was definitely put in by gay directors during the transformation, we see his dick get enlarged as well.
Yeah.
which is a nice little detail.
It gets very big under that sheet, though. Like, it looks impractical. I wonder if he has trouble with that thing, but...
Well, he fitted into those speedos pretty well. So.
I love that blonde woman, you know, when she shoves him down on the bed, the southern woman.
And
what, very crazy. Yeah.
With a crazy one?
Oh, like, she was, like, nuts and scary. Like, there was nothing sexual about that scene.
For sure. And she rips that shirt off of him very easily. But she also, she says the word lummox, but she says lummox. And you can tell that the actress read that word on the script and had never said it before.
Said it before,
and no
one
corrected her. And that just made me laugh. That was, like, my biggest laugh of the movie, was her saying, "You, that stupid lummox."
he does have an interesting relationship with women in this film. So obviously, you know, he fucks half the town, but then eventually we see him murder a woman trying to, get his autograph by climbing over his fence with a grappling hook,
and then uses an axe to cut her rope.
Yeah, and she falls to her death.
Well, I wasn't clear about what it is that he wants to begin with. Other than, like, I know that he fantasizes at the beginning about being a cool guy. But if there was, like, a girl at the office that he was into that he felt he couldn't have. Like, I never quite understood. And also, by the time we get to the end, I was like, what is the whole point of this? Because I thought that them setting up him being treated like shit by all those people at, what is it, Seashores? What's that place called?
Sea spray
with like the shittiest sign to know where we are. It's like, yeah, anyway. But they're so cruel to him because I thought he's gonna show them up, like he's gonna become hunk and then they're all gonna, you know, but he just has them at a party and then we kind of lose touch with those people by the end. And then he gets all into his psychiatrist, whatever. But what it is that he's being given access to through this storytelling device is never particularly clear to me. If he wants riches or, like, he just seems to want to enjoy
or,
his summer.
Or even to be accepted because, like you said, like, that whole setup of the community and him trying to, like, you know, get inside the in crowd just completely falls away as well. Like, each time one of these things is set up and you're like, all right, he's going to get that thing, and then realize it's not what it's what it all is cracked up to be. It's not even relevant anymore. So, yeah.
I think, you know, that they use the word yuppie a lot, and that was like a concept built in the 80s. And I think this film was trying to be a commentary on that. That's, you know, culture of excess that was building up, and that image that, you know, was being advertised of, like, the beautiful woman on your arm, on your, you know, convertible car, hanging at the beach around all your other rich friends. And I think the film is about him discovering how empty that culture really is and learning to appreciate what he actually does have.
But you're reading that into it, though. Like, that doesn't really happen.
Yeah, you're like,
in the movie.
This is what is supposed to.
He specifically calls out those kind of advertisements.
But he also,
he mentions them.
He passively enters into this bargain. Like, he thinks that the woman is joking, but he signs his name in blood anyway. He's like, all right. It's like, if you think this, if you don't believe that this woman is the devil and you think she's insane, why are you signing your name on a piece of paper that you haven't read? Because even if she's not actually like a supernatural minion of hell,
after stabbing you with a needle.
Well, yeah, but she might have written on that sheet that, like, I get everything you own or something. Like, I would still read it even if I thought this person was crazy. And I also wouldn't sign it. So he just sort of enters into that. And then he doesn't accept the change once it happens. So we don't get enough of him having a wonderful time being this other person that he's always dreamed of being and indulging in it. And then it doesn't really make sense because then he is in the same room as his former body because the real Brendan whatever is being, what's his name? I'm
held in.
He was Bradley. And then he became
Brendan.
Hunk.
You're Brendan.
Hunk Golden.
Hunk Golden. Which, yeah, thanks for this great pseudonym that I'm sure will never get noticed. But they're brought together because the real guy is being held in hell. And, like, I didn't really understand that because isn't he transformed and therefore...
Yeah, isn't that him? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was confused as well.
Isn't this a Swapcast podcast, Paul?
Yeah.
Well, it still is a Swapcast because I was confused with that at the beginning.
Oh, my God. But then you found a way to, like,
defend this movie now, and I'm going to understand why you guys want to punch him in the face all the time. Okay, go on.
The devil does explain it later in the film.
Okay.
He does say that Bradley is the weaker part of his soul separated. So Hunk still is Bradley, just all the good parts of Bradley put into a new body.
From the perspective of the devil, the good parts.
Yes. Wow. As in, like...
And for Paul. Wow.
All the good hunky parts.
This, for such a silly, ridiculous movie that's made as an indulgence, there's way too much explaining necessary for me to even understand what's happening.
There were a lot of long exposition scenes
for
between
sure.
The devil and the yep. woman. Like, yeah.
Well, yeah, I was like, Chachka just comes in to explain... This is the town. These are the cool people. Your house was owned by a crazy sailor man. Did you know that? The house you're renting? And it's like, oh, this must come into play later. No.
No. So as a proud Greek man, Bill, how did you feel about the...
Constantine Costopoulos?
Costopoulos.
Well, I mean, it just made me laugh because the actor playing him is named Avery Schreiber, so I'm going to guess he's not really Greek. Again, you guys as Australians come in contact with my kind of people all the time, more than anybody yeah. else outside of Greece, so... So you yeah. know that his accent was like a New York Jew. So this is what you give me. And I was like, okay, could we try a little bit, or just why did you even make him Greek? Like just make him, Gus Sheinstein or something, given that that character was doing. He was basically playing Jack Lemmon's neighbor in the apartment, like that very New York yeah. Jewish type stereotype. So. I wasn't offended by it. It was just wholly inaccurate, but I mean, I knew what movie I was watching, so I can't say that it hurt me deep somewhere on the inside.
I don't think I understood exactly what Bradley's his job was and what the computer program was doing.
Well, thank that's God, 80s please. Logic with computers, because no one had a computer in their house. I did not have one in my house until like the 89, and we were rather relative early adopters because my sister was entering university, and so they got one for her to type her essays on. So mm-hmm. I feel like 80s movies have a lot of like... It's just a computer thing. Like if you've watched Superman 3, which relies on this a lot, which is that people don't really know much about computers, so you can get away with anything.
Because I think the way that the film has it is like he puts an idea into the computer and then it spits out a book.
Yeah.
Is that what...
I get the impression that he's a computer programmer. I just couldn't tell if, like, were they making games, like software games, or were they making... like programs to be used in some.
Yeah, was it an Excel spreadsheet?
Right. Kind of,
like,
right.
What is the yuppie program? The right. the million dollar program that he wrote.
It's an eagle. Pattern. I have no clue. It's an eagle pattern on a piece of paper. That's like the dot matrix makes animal shapes, and that's his $1 million program.
The other scene that I have to say made me laugh, and it's probably going to make me seem like a bad person.
Too late.
Was when... More of one, I guess. Is when he starts turning evil and he decides to spray down the crowd of people waiting outside of his house with a hose.
Yeah.
And he specifically hones in on the overweight guy. And it's like, take that, fat boy!
Yep. Yeah, thin privilege. What are you gonna do? I love the fact that he stops that car that's reversing on the pier and he's on the cover of a major Los Angeles newspaper the next day, which is hilarious.
Just for being hot. Like, yeah, it's nothing to do with the fact that he, like, you know, saved the day. It was, everyone was, like, just applauding him for being hot.
But
like,
this is why I think this movie was made for 10-year-olds, is because the fantasy of being that popular with no specifics involved is something that not a kid would be like, anything?
Yeah.
The fact that you break fashion rules by wearing vests open with just a tie and no shirt, I mean, that's his contribution to society.
They weren't even vests. They were suit jackets with the sleeves cut off.
Oh, is that what it was? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. That was the fashion trend he started.
Wow.
But yeah, I personally think that you should get put on the cover of Time magazine for just being hot.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, I know.
What other reason is there?
Why does she make all of his appliances turn on when he's trying to take a nap?
To make him, like, stay awake.
To make him crazy?
To make it so noisy that he can't get any sleep.
Yeah, but why did she not want him to sleep?
Yeah.
Because they didn't want him to have another dream where he, like, reconsiders his position on, like, you know, turning back into Bradley.
I hate you both.
Do you find that we're more forgiving of the films on our show than you are with your co-hosts?
I think you guys, your brains have been beaten down by watching this garbage for so long. But it's fun for the... I never watch the movies that you guys talk about unless I've already seen them. Yeah. So,
but don't you watch bad movies?
It's true, I do. Yeah, I don't... I'm sure my brain is also destroyed from everything I've put myself through as well. Yeah,
I have to say, I was listening to the episode you posted this week, which was like an old episode, one of your first ones.
Yeah.
I did love, I forgot if it was Michael or somebody on your show said that Brett Corrigan should be in 12 Years a Slave.
That was probably Daniel. It. That's something that Daniel would say. Yeah,
he's a gay porn star.
We've got.
Thanks for the context.
Which at the time we recorded that, I didn't know the details of the murder investigation that he was sort of peripherally involved with. I saw that movie Cobra Killer after that, and I've read that book, so I know a lot more.
Well, it's
about
funny.
It,
but... You guys were like, they should turn this into the movie, and then they
right.
did.
Yeah, so, they totally did. No, we've had a lot of messages recently from people. I guess not complaining, but mentioning that there are early episodes that they can't listen to because our podcast is on WordPress. I'm from back before there were all these other fancier podcast applications, and I've never switched over because I'm too lazy. And so the earliest episodes get dropped off the feed. And, you know, I'm on hiatus this summer and recording a few episodes when I come back from Greece. So I thought I'll just re-release those episodes. I've edited them a little bit just to cut a few things out, but I just thought it would be fun for people. And I was shocked re-listening to them because that episode you're talking about is from 10 years ago and my voice has changed in 10 years, which is, you know, makes sense. But I was really surprised listening to it.
All the cocksuckings destroyed your
Yes.
throat?
Yeah. My soft palate has been destroyed. I wish. Honestly, I wish that was true. If someone was like, you've wasted your life doing nothing but going down on men every day of your life, I'd be like, oh my God, I made it.
See, why didn't you like Hunk more?
Because it doesn't have enough of that. Because all the indulgence of his perfect body felt accidental. And I would have appreciated if there was just more indulging in badness before he gets whatever stupid 80s moral lesson he gets at the end. Because, you know, American stuff about... Well, I shouldn't say just American, but mainstream movies that are about indulging in a sex fantasy are always about punishing that fantasy by the end and making us realize that we all just want to be monogamous and in love, you know. And I just wish it enjoyed indulging in that before ruining it for us at the end.
Did it ruin it for you dudes that he like started macking with the chick?
No, because I expected it. But why isn't there like a gratuitous ass shot of his? We never see full nudity.
We do not see the buttocks, do
we? No.
Yeah.
No. And this is a guy who was very proud of his body. I mean, he's also, I just recently watched him in a movie that was in the Erotic Thrillers collection on Criterion. I think it's called Deadly Illusions. And it's kind of a reverse Basic Instinct where she's the cop who thinks he's probably the serial killer, but she can't resist him anyway. So he spends a lot of his time Sharon Stoning it around the house naked. And, you know, you can tell that this actor, like, has put together this physique for a reason, which is that he's proud to show it off. And, you know, he always looks good in that very metallic late 80s, mm-hmm. early 90s way. So I don't know that he's against showing off his butt. But
okay, sorry, I'm just downloading Deadly Illusions.
You don't see him as often as you do in this movie. It's a fun, cheap thriller. Like, it's not good in any way, but
you've sold me.
Yeah, but anything you watch him in from around this time shows him off in this particular way. And this is a kind of guy that the film industry always has around, which is you know, really very picture perfect, good looking magazine cover style, not necessarily movie star charisma with that kind of contradictory quality that makes people compelling. And then mm-hmm. off the set, like professionally, someone who's lovely that people like seem to like having around. And, you know, it's a kind of guy I meet all the time.
Yeah. He's a Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Now that's a perfect specimen. A man and a half. Puts you two both to shame.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Hello again. I didn't catch your name.
Brennan. Hunk. My name is Hunk Golden.
So you heard what we thought of the movie.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
But how attractive did we find the cast? Now it's time for Hot or Not. Now, Bill, do you know our Hot or Not theme enough to sing it for us?
Are you a toot or a boot? Are you ugly or cute? Tell me if you're hot or not. Ding. Everyone is not beautiful in their own way. They're not. I have a feeling Lucy made you guys add that because she's the one of us with a soul, but
yes.
I don't think it's true.
That is exactly how it went down.
Well, it's like, for some reason, she has a problem objectifying people.
Whatever. Women are always obsessed with making sure we think they're people. I don't go for it.
All right. So let's begin with Mr. Hunk Golden himself, John Allen Nelson.
Who we've been constantly talking about.
We've been talking about how attractive he is for the last 30 minutes.
Well, I mean, it's what the movie's about.
Yeah.
Can I just say the ego to take this role on? Like,
yeah.
There's like women who like not just one, like multiple women who will like jump into traffic so they can stop his car.
There's a lot of times when I'm like driving and then women just like losing their minds as he drives by. I'm like, there's no way you even got that good a look at him. You just like his convertible.
Yeah, there's like a car driving down the road. You spot like the most beautiful man and then you're like, oh, I'm gonna like risk my bodily like safety and
even
jump in front of it.
That's a type that you meet a lot in like a California beach town, you know, like he actually wouldn't turn heads just because that's what you expect to see when you're living in that kind of a place. You know, and I don't say that to take anything away from him. He is absolutely hot, especially in an 80s context. He's incredibly good looking.
Yeah. I imagine he earned the role. Like he's throwing up. He's, you know, jacking his quads. Or I don't know what
at a time when that was not the popular thing to do. Like, abs don't become necessary for actors until after Brad Pitt in Thelma and Louise.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. His body was very, like, 2023 Instagram worthy.
Mm-hmm. Except no tattoos. Which,
I'm going to put this out there. I am going to put him on the top of the heap. He is...
better than Keyboard Guy.
This is beyond Keyboard Guy.
What if Keyboard Guy took his top off?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't. So, John Allen Nelson gets the number one award, hottest ever swap performance.
Well, Paul and I are both like, we're very ethnic. So, the more a guy looks like he's going to lock us away in a concentration camp, the more attractive we find him, unfortunately. So, that makes perfect sense that he's the top of the heap. Because I totally, I don't disagree.
Yes. No. So hot. But I have to say, Steve Levitt as Bradley, his like former nerdy version.
Mm-hmm. No, not an ugly guy. No,
not ugly and pretty good body as well.
Yeah,
like
no, he's cute. He's nerdy cute. You could totally see that guy having a charisma, like a sexual charisma. He's just coded as what the 80s defines as nerdy, and, even though he's not actually like hideous. Yeah,
yeah, I would.
Yeah, educated and have other interests rather than
and doesn't blow dry his hair. That's basically what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I would kill my firstborn for that head of hair and that body. So, you know, no deal with the devil necessary for me.
Just killing babies.
Just killing babies. This is what happens when I guest on people's podcasts. Things take a dark turn despite you not wanting it to.
Deborah Shelton as O'Brien, the temptress. Stunning, right?
We'll let the straight guy start.
Yeah.
Let him have a moment.
Dude, when she like came out of the water and I could see her nips, I was like, whoa. Like,
did that happen?
Why are you American now? No. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you did see nips through the
Yeah. No, she was beautiful. Yeah,
that was enough.
In Body Double, she plays like the object of his obsession, and it makes perfect sense. Like, she looks like until she wore
that dress.
Yeah.
Because
the shoulder pads, that one like emphasizes the 80s shoulders pads. The rest of her dresses were all tons of fun, even at their and most ridiculous, but that one was unflattering.
The stare.
But she was on Dallas for a few seasons as well, and she was,
and the reboot as well, I think.
I believe so. Yeah, she was very beautiful, and is still very beautiful.
Yeah,
yeah.
Rebecca Bush as Sunny, her therapist alter ego.
Oh, that ugo. No, beautiful as well.
Yeah, it's stunning. It's actually crazy in any way that the film posits that she was not attractive.
I think it was just positing she was the second most beautiful princess, right?
Yeah,
like her sister was slightly more Aryan.
Yeah, and she's wearing what looks like when you're serving food in an amusement park, like a medieval themed amusement park, is her costume at the end. That I'm pretty sure they probably grabbed it from an amusement park.
Or they just like, they went to like the Bill and Ted lot and went, what were the princesses wearing? Like,
Doug Shacklin as Skeet Meckleburger. This guy looked like a Tom of Finland picture come to life.
Oh, the bully
mustachio
guy. Yeah.
Bully,
That's the bad toupee. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say no. I mean, he could use some styling, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty fucking hot.
He's like the bad guy in Stranger by the Lake in a previous life, you know? Like the murderer guy that he's obsessed with? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like he definitely, he exuded like being a piece of shit, but like in a hot way.
Yeah, well, when do you and I not find a guy who's a piece of shit not hot?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Brendan, did he do it for you?
Mm. I think he like really suited a moustache. Like, and
Paige Mosley as Coaster Royce. Was that the, I don't know, he doesn't have an IMDb picture. Was that the other bully guy? Or am I thinking?
Maybe. I don't think that, was that his name? Hillary Shepherd is the bitchy half of the couple of the seascape people.
Well, the other guy, we can just call him Noel Fielding because he looks like Noel Fielding from The Mighty Boosh.
Okay. Anyway, people he was fuckable think he's as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, people think Noel Fielding's attractive, so there you go.
Well, we've got two gay guys and only one straight, so I think we don't have to do any more of the women. So that's enough for that segment.
I can embroider that on a pillow. We don't have to do any more of the women.
Oh, I look like many different people throughout history. All of them rotten.
And were you dressed like Genghis Khan?
Attila the Hun. We're sacking Rome in 451 AD. Actually, I just popped in for a Coke Classic.
Now it's time for Opinion Swap, where we find some entertaining reviews of Hunk from across the interwebs. All right, so this one's from Laird, who says, while never riotously funny, it coasts by on an awkward charm and by being somewhat of a unicorn. a sorta sex, sorta comedy that sidesteps creepiness and centers its gaze on hunks instead of tits and ass. Mm. It backgrounds getting laid as just a side effect of having confidence, okay, and being a hunk, and not a raison d'être.
That person feels guilty about masturbating to to him and his speedos. I love it when people make it an accomplishment of a movie. It's like, well, this movie sexually exploits men instead of women. And it's like, that's a mark of its quality.
It focuses more on its own fantasy mythos and moralizing about character than anything else. Even its opportunity for a tacky gay scare is played with a lighter touch than one would expect. I wish the comedy were a bit more consistent, but I'll take this over canonized 80s comedies that are nearly unwatchable in 2022, like Revenge of the Nerds or Police Academy.
Yeah, I mean, that's not wrong.
Erica says, damn right the devil drinks Coke. Fuck Pepsi.
Oh, well, she really went in deep.
Ryan gives it 1.5 stars, and he starts with a quote from the film, which is, I'm gonna wrap your nuts around your neck, Twinkie dick.
Where are you, you getting these from? Letterboxd, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, because you're reading people's first names only, and it's like, are you just like reading S Club 7 members reviewing this movie?
Ryan says, was this film stupid? Oh, absolutely. Is Chachka an icon? Oh, absolutely. Was Bradley not actually ugly and in pretty decent shape? Yep. Did I enjoy the scenes where Hunk walks around in nothing but underwear or a Speedo? Absolutely. But the best thing about this movie is the implication that yuppies are indeed demons.
Mm. Again, not wrong. Although I do wonder how much he suffered shooting this movie wearing next to nothing, because I feel like there are cold days on the beach.
I feel like I need to reach out and get him on the show. Do you think he'll do it? Is he at that level?
I don't think so.
I'm going to try.
At that level.
No offense to anyone that's been on this show. But
I mean, I get the impression he has a pretty good sense of humor about his, you know, his oeuvre.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Qbort gives it 3 stars and says, Hunk is just great 80s fun. I don't know. Sorry. I don't know why anyone would complain about it.
Hmm.
I agree, Qbort.
Hi, Garrison Gaylord here. This week on Filthy Rich, we scamper along the sleek, chic, sunny shores of the Greek island of Info, a millionaire's paradise.
Cut!
What?
Number one, Garrison, your fly is open.
Okay, let's get to tenuous recommendations, where we each recommend a piece of media that is linked to today's movie in some way. And a reminder, if you ever want to see a list of all the recommendations we have made on the show, head over to our Letterboxd page, which is linked on our website. So, I'll get us started. My connection is films about unlucky in love nerds being given self-confidence by sexy women tasked with seducing them for some sort of payment.
That's a bit vague, Paul. If you could specify that a little bit more, we'd really appreciate it.
Well, fancy this. The other movie I watched this week in theaters happened to have this exact theme, which was the new sex comedy No Hard Feelings, starring Jennifer Lawrence. Mm-hmm. So this is directed by Gene Stupinski, who did Good Boys, which was another really hilarious comedy. And I think he's done it again. I really enjoyed this film. It has that great balance of like raunchy, out there humor, very hard R, mixed with some really great moments of heart. Like, you actually care about these characters, you care about the predicaments, you want the best for these characters. Jennifer Lawrence really puts her all into this, and I do mean all. She has a very revealing scene, which I don't want to ruin in this, but I was very surprised that she agreed to do this. Yeah. And you know, good on her. She said in all her interviews, like, how behind this film she was from reading the script, and how, you know, it brought her out of a semi-retirement she was in. And I can see why. This film, I think, has the potential to be beloved for years to come. It's one of those films that's going to be a streaming staple, I feel. So, but it's having the rare privilege of getting a wide cinema release around the world. So I think everyone who's sick of every movie being a superhero or a sequel should go and support this one.
And I feel so, like there's they're kind of making a push for her to regain her throne as well. This movie feels like it's being pushed really hard by people wanting to make her a star again.
Yeah, and I think it makes a very good case for it to happen.
So. Well, I never understood why she, like, other than taking time off to have a baby, like, I never understood why we were suddenly over her and that we were mad at her for some reason. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. So, no hard feelings, in the cinemas everywhere now.
Yeah. Paul loves it. So it's probably terrible, just so everyone knows. Yeah. Brendan can't say it because he has to deal with them in daily life.
He'll say it anyway.
Yeah.
This is my favorite section of the show, by the way, because this is the point at which Brendan will be like, well, this movie starts with the letter H. So here's another movie that starts with the letter H. And then you just listen to Paul get so fucking angry when during this section. And it's a delight for the rest of us to hear.
Well, before we get to that pleasure, Bill, what's your recommendation?
Well, the second letter in the title is U. No, I'm just kidding. as I mentioned, James Coco is the supporting role of this film as the devil, as Captain D. Is that his name? Dr. D?
Dr. D.
Dr. D. I mean, the implications of that. And I know that he was gay. I'm pretty sure he was open about it at some point in life. I'm not sure. This movie actually is released the year that he died at the age of 56 of a heart attack. But he was a really successful actor. He won an Emmy Award. He was nominated for an Academy Award. And usually in this type of character, this kind of Dom DeLuise, but with more soul. And and he was just wonderful. Anyway, so I'm going to take advantage of my position as a guest and give two recommendations, because there's two really wonderful films that he's in that belie the fact that he probably more often had to do movies like Hunk to pay the bills. His Oscar nom is for a movie called Only When I Laugh with Marsha Mason, which is a wonderful film, probably my favorite Neil Simon film. And he's in a Merchant Ivory movie from 1975 called The Wild Party, co-starring Raquel Welch, who is the star of the original Bedazzled, is she not? Did you guys do that movie on this show? Yeah.
We haven't yet, no.
So The Wild Party is about is a sort of fictionalization of the Fatty Arbuckle scandal in the silent era, and it's about him trying to revive his career. And it's a wonderful, it's a beautiful period piece, and he's great in it. And it's, like I said, it's a Merchant Ivory film. James Ivory has a lot to say about dealing with Raquel Welch on that set in his autobiography. And I recommend it. I recommend them both.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Brendan, what's yours?
Well, yeah, I'm always like nervous about talking about films when there's like people who are like much more learned, and you know, like the way you talk about films, and it's like, I'm gonna be like, oh, there's this film and it's like really good, so you know, watch it. Like, that would be my anyway.
I know, but your extreme level of that is what makes it so charming, because the amount of times you guys make talk about movies and you've never heard of anyone, and it's hysterically funny when it's someone like Dick Van Dyke or somebody where you're like, oh, is that somebody? Like, that makes me laugh.
But like, I feel like I'm a movie person. Like, I thought I was a cinephile or something like that. I just don't know anyone's name. Anyway, the movie I'm choosing starts with a guy regaling his trauma to a therapist. So that's my connection to this film.
Yeah.
It's called Dude Bro Party Massacre 3. Have any of you guys watched this show? I mean, maybe.
That's a Mike Lee film, I believe. Yeah, that's a...
Mike Lee?
Yeah. No, I'm just
See?
Kidding.
Who's that?
That's a joke. Oh. See?
Okay.
Lost on
you.
Oh, you mean Pedro Almodovar's Dude Bro Party Massacre 3. Will I understand it if I haven't watched Dude Bro Party Massacres 1 and 2?
Well, there's only one of them, so...
Oh.
It's very much an homage to, you know, all those sort of like... what's the one with the slumber party?
Slumber Party Massacre.
Mm. Yeah, Slumber Party Massacre and like every like 80s horror film, slasher film kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's made by a bunch of like YouTubers who do this... thing called 5 Second Films.
Okay.
And so they for years would make, like, before TikTok, before Vines and all this, they were dedicated to making every day a 5 second like short film, like a comedy kind of thing. And then they eventually built up enough of a following, they were like, let's do a feature film, and it's really dumb and it's really funny. It's all over the place. And they've just started doing their shtick again, so I thought I would pull it out for a watch. So
okay, and recommend it. So it's called Dude Bro Party Massacre 3, and yes, obviously, so it's paying out the Slumber Party Massacre films, which famously had a lot of like boobs and girls in like bikinis. So are we getting the Dude Bro equivalent of that in these in this film?
He's asking you if it's worth his time, Brandon.
I don't recall the bodies of the men in the film, so maybe not. Do you see a lot of like dong?
You never see dong. He wants to know if there's a stringy twink in what you refer to as a singlet. I believe that's what he wants to know.
Oh yeah, there's lots of frat boys. Yeah, but you know, bear in mind they are a bunch of YouTubers. They're not
so
like...
The girls in Slumber Party Massacre often experimented with each other. Mm-hmm. Did these dude bros do that?
It's been a while since I saw it. It came out in 2015.
Yeah. I have a feeling your recommendation's falling flat, Brendan. I'm just going to suggest this possibility.
Sorry, let me just Google Dude Bro Party Massacre topless men kissing.
Larry King is in the movie, by the way. This is what I noticed when I looked up the IMDb. So the answer is no.
My first result is a site called AZ Nude.
Okay.
Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 nude scenes. Nude scenes. Zero images, zero videos. I think you're going to be disappointed, mate.
I hope authorities never have to look through Brendan's search engine to realize the effect that being friends with Paul has wreaked on his life.
Yeah, it's like every now and then there's just a gay porn search for some reason.
Hey, is that illegal?
It should be.
Kill him, son.
I'm gonna wrap your nuts around your neck, Twinkie Dick.
No, Steve!
If you head over to our website, you'll see that each of us has ranked every body swap film we've reviewed on the podcast, apart from Bill, who has no list of the movies we've reviewed on the podcast. I mean, he could make myself one if he wanted one.
Well, it's got one on there now, so I place Hunk somewhere near Hunk.
Yeah. There you go. So my question is, where are we going to all put Hunk on our lists? So
I know the boner status is going to make Paul put it much higher on the list than it deserves
than it
to be.
Deserves, sure. Let me see if I could guess by Paul's erection. Where's this one being placed?
It's also how we predict the weather in Australia, is Paul's erections.
I'm looking at your list, and you've actually not put anything up the top too far for being full of hot dudes.
Hmm.
See, I'm reputable. So if this is high, it's because of reputable reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I feel like Paul's going to put it around 13 going on 30 and Shazam. That's my guess, but it could go anyway.
Nah,
it's going to be above Virtual Sexuality. That's what I know.
Okay. Well, you're wrong because it's going way higher than that.
Really?
I'm putting this in between Big and 14 going on 30.
Wow.
That's disgusting.
And I think Big, Hunk, and 14 going on 30 would make an amazing triple feature of 80s swapness.
Yeah. because you can stand watching these movies. I don't even know that I could do a single feature of most of the movies on your list.
surely you have time for Big though, Bill.
Well, first of all, my name's not Shirley, and I was never as into that movie as everyone is. I recognize that it's a really good movie, but it's never been something that meant a lot to me personally.
Because you never wanted to have sex with an older woman or be an older woman who wants to have sex
Although,
with a
14-year-old you could
boy.
Do worse than Elizabeth Perkins, a fellow yeah. Greek person, I should also point out. But yeah, and I love Tom Hanks, but I don't like Lucy style love Tom Hanks, you know? Like
Paul gets to see him in his underwear, so.
Well, and he had like a sweet little slim body back in the day. I don't know. He's never been someone that I'm that enthusiastic about. So I don't know. It's a good movie. That's the same year as Big Business with Bette Midler, and being a gay kid in the 80s, that was definitely more my line of interest.
I mean, why not both?
Mm. Exactly. Yeah.
Brendan, so where's it going on your list?
It's going above And You Thought Your Parents Are Weird, which is... I feel like it's on the same level. Like, that one's quite high up my list for the same reason that this is where it is. It's something about it feels like
torture. Yeah. I feel like the movies that Paul has made you guys watch is like on the level of a human rights violation.
I don't know if you would understand this. Like, we had three channels most of our lives, and when, you know, and this thing came on, and I was like, oh, this feels like when I had no other options, right? And I would watch anything. And that reminded me of being a kid. So it has some like nostalgic, like there's something inside me that like was like, ah, this feels like I'm a child again.
Funnily enough, you've put it below Switch, which was the film that Bill
suggested
asked us to review.
Yeah, you guys didn't like it as much as I did. I love that movie.
So I didn't enjoy it, but
well, I love it for her. Yeah. I should say, but yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. She's great, and yeah. I mean she's verified double hot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's got the Swapcast tick of approval.
Yeah.
But so you survived an episode of the Swapcast. Well done.
Oh, it was thrilling. It was thrilling.
Yeah, and we didn't even get to hear much of your Australian accent.
Well, because I know that it's terrible. I went on a date with an Australian guy once, and I was, you know, whipping out my Muriel's Wedding quotes, and he just looked at me and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Oh, it's good, is it?"
That sounds like a Victorian Englishman.
Well, you know why? It's because us non-Australians, we watch, like, you know, movies where, especially Australian comedies, usually have characters with these very broad, you know, accents and personalities. So that's what we think is Australian, is like this real jackaroo way of speaking. But you as city folk, I know that you guys don't actually sound quite as extreme as, like, "You're terrible, Muriel." You know, you're not really quite that.
I think it's just Adelaide. We all sound like we've still, like, come off the boat from...
Yeah, but so do people in, like, my friends in Melbourne as well. It's not as strong, but it's not like being from the...
It's those animals in Queensland.
Yeah. Talk about pieces of shit.
Oh, and the hottest place in the world. I have never been more humid in my life than I was when we were up in, like, Airlie Beach. And I would cover myself in sunscreen before walking out of the house and then just be like... An absolute puddle. I remember I sat down at a pub table and I slid off my seat because I was so slick from how. But it's so beautiful. I mean, Australia is unlike anywhere else in the world. I look forward to coming back. It's incredible.
You know, I often get told I sound Canadian. So
that's interesting. I would never make that assumption.
So before we talk about what we're going to be reviewing next episode, tell us what's happening on your show at the moment.
Well, I'm enjoying the summer, collecting a few interviews with people to put together a season for the fall. So probably, hopefully in September, I will have... I like to basically, because I do them differently than we used to do 10 years ago, just because my co-hosts have, you know, we've all gotten very busy and I've been adapting as such. And also we've been doing it for 10 years. So I will record about 12 episodes and then release them one a week. And I will hopefully be doing that in September. And we've got some good selections coming up of legit movies that we're talking about, as well as returning to the sort of TLA garbage that that is the most fun to talk about.
Yeah, so yeah. For people who haven't listened before, your show is mostly centered around those terrible low-budget gay movies that seem to be made consistently.
That in many cases make Hunk look like Saving Private Ryan by comparison, yeah.
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 Opposed to those big budget gay films.
Well, you know, now because I will invite guests on to do like one-on-one interviews, I will ask them if they have a movie they want to do, and if they pick, like, our last episode was about Bros, which is, you know, a big deal. So if that's what my guest wants to talk about, I'll go with it. As long as it's a movie that has some relevance to the theme of the show in some way, or that they can justify it as such, and so long as it's a movie we haven't done before, I'm open to whatever the guest wants to do.
If our listeners aren't aware as well, I'm also on a couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, much to my delight, Paul has been on the show, I think, three times.
I think two, was it? We did Out of Body and My Brother's Shoes.
I feel like you were on another one, too. I can't remember. I have a guest page on the Bad Game Movies website, but you will, of course, be on again, because it's always a thrill to have you. And particularly when I have a swap movie, which we've done a few, I'm always happy to have Paul on to talk about it.
You save them all for their podcast.
The bad. You don't want to
swap films.
You do not want to be put through what I've, what we've watched.
Yeah, to a joke.
Out of Body in particular. I actually wanted to like rip my own face off.
Yeah.
That was.
We didn't even know what to say about it. It was that bad. But yeah.
Like, what's a good episode for someone who's never listened before?
That's a good question, Paul. Do you have a suggestion of one that stood out to you?
Like one that Paul's not in.
There it is.
What was the fucking movie with Mae West?
Oh, Sextet.
Sextet.
Yeah, with my friend Lisa.
Listening to that episode, I was in tears crying. And then, like, of laughter, obviously, not upset crying. But, and the movie itself is definitely worth watching. Like, watch the movie and listen to the episode. They're both hilarious.
Oh, amazing. So, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
But I think it's a show you can pretty much jump into any episode. They're all entertaining, so.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. There's like 175 episodes, so, there's plenty to enjoy. Yeah.
Okay, so our next episode, we'll be covering our very first Chinese body swap with the 2017 comedy Never Say Die, where a boxer and a journalist accidentally exchange bodies after they are struck by a current, embarking on a series of adventures. So we finally get to know the differences between journalists and boxers.
And I'm going to pretend that I'm going to watch that movie in preparation to listen to your episode. Can't wait.
So, yeah, sounds like a fun one. But, yeah, Bill, thanks so much for getting up at an ungodly hour to being on our show. We very much appreciate it.
I very, very much had a wonderful time. I so appreciated you having me on. Thank you. And, Brendan, it was so lovely to finally meet you properly, because, like I said, I do feel like I know you guys after all these years. I had a very bad time after a play that I was writing got canceled in, I think, 2016, 17, and I was having to work a second job to pay off a disastrous level of expense that fell on me. And it meant delivering food at all hours of the night after working my day job. And one of the things that helped was listening to you guys chatting while I was driving around in the freezing cold winter alone. And I always think of you guys doing that for me at that time. So thank you for lightening my spirits when I needed it.
That's really nice. Yeah. Mm.
Thank you.
I just feel terrible because I haven't listened to your podcast.
Well, that's because you're a shit.
Who listens to anyone's podcast?
What is it? A DPW? Is that what you are?
DPW. Yes. Yeah.
There's but no one in the world worse than a straight Australian man, so I don't even know why you're even trying to pretend to be decent in the least.
I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah, I
know that.
Not as bad as if you were a Sydney straight Australian man, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, speaking of pieces of shit, don't be a piece of shit, DPW, and review us on iTunes or Spotify. And I was Paul Mitzi.
I was Brendan Levi.
And I was Bill Antoniou.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. I think my voice cracked.
You're finally there. It's finally happening.
Because I watched The Hunk.
The Swapcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Too Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.